This podcast contains descriptions of violence against children and adult language and is not suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Suffer the Little Children, the true crime podcast giving voices back to the victims of child abuse and shining a harsh spotlight on the parents, guardians, and caretakers who silence them. I'm your host, Lane, and this is episode 76, Dante Mullinix. 2 weeks before his third birthday, two-year-old Dante Mullinix was rushed to the hospital, unresponsive. His mother's boyfriend claimed Dante choked on animal crackers. Several days later, on September 15, 2018, Dante was pronounced dead. His death was ruled a homicide caused by traumatic brain injury with strangulation and chest compression. An autopsy revealed the toddler's head was covered with bruises, and he also had bleeding on the brain as well as hemorrhaging inside his neck. Police arrested 40-year-old Tyree Bowie and charged him with Dante's murder. He currently awaits trial, but Dante's aunt, Sarah Mullinix, and many others believe he is innocent. Did authorities in York County, Pennsylvania, arrest the wrong man? Will there ever be true justice for little Dante? This is the infuriating story of Dante Mullinix. Before I get into Dante's story, I'd like to give a shout out to my newest patron, Carrie from Newcastle in the UK. Thank you so much for your support, Carrie. I can't even begin to tell you how much I appreciate all of my patrons, who bring me closer to my goal with every pledge. Today's story is one of those that'll stick with you long after the episode's over. If you're anything like me, you'll be left with a sick feeling and a pit of anger in your stomach. Dante's story has more twists and turns than your average roller coaster. I'm not going to give my opinion on whether or not the person awaiting trial for Dante's murder is guilty. Instead, I'm just going to give you everything I was able to dig up and let you decide what you believe. Let's get into it. Leah Lynette Mullinix was born on December 30, 1996, to parents Larry and Victoria. Leah was the youngest of five siblings, including an older sister born to Victoria during a previous marriage. Leah had a fairly normal childhood. She liked reading, playing video games, and watching cartoons, and she hated cleaning her room. In school, she was quiet and got frequent headaches, saying the other kids in her class were too loud. When Leah was little, Victoria and Larry divorced. When Leah was 11, Victoria moved from Pennsylvania to Texas to remarry. Leah decided to stay in Pennsylvania to live with her father, who worked as a machinist, and her older sister, Sarah. On her 18th birthday, Leah left her father's home and moved in with Sarah, who was the middle child of the family and has five children of her own. Sarah Rose Mullinix was born on June 11, 1986, so she was almost 10 years older than Leah and tried to help her baby sister out as much as she could. While Leah was growing up, she copied Sarah a lot, from adopting the same hair color to apparently trying to date the same men. At the time Leah moved in, Sarah lived with the father of two of her children, 36-year-old Joe Edward Sanchez, a man with a criminal record that started small in 2003 with a drug arrest, but quickly ramped up. Joe later pleaded guilty to an incident in 2007 that earned him charges of aggravated and simple assault, criminal trespassing, physical harassment, and burglary. By pleading guilty to trespassing and simple assault, he had the other charges dismissed, and he was sentenced to 22 months in prison for the trespassing charge and 11 to 23 months for assault. Court records indicate that Joe managed to escape from prison in November of 2008, an offense for which he was sentenced to spend an additional 6 to 24 months in prison. Joe was out of prison by the time Leah moved in with Sarah, and he immediately began putting the moves on his girlfriend's baby sister. Within a month or so of her 18th birthday, Leah, who was a senior at Gettysburg High School, was pregnant with her first child by the same man who fathered two of her sister's kids. Leah told the York Daily Record,
"He's one of those people who likes playing mind games and everything. He knew what I wanted, because at that point I was 18. I just wanted somebody to love me and everything."
Leah told the reporter that she was bullied as a kid, saying that people told her she wouldn't amount to anything and that she would probably end up dropping out of school, running away, and getting pregnant. Leah told the reporter,
"Yeah, I got pregnant, but I didn't run away, and I graduated high school."
By the time she graduated, Leah was indeed nearing her third trimester of pregnancy, and she already knew the name she would bestow on the baby, Dante. She had picked it out as far back as eighth grade. Sarah's relationship with Joe ended with domestic violence. Over a two-day period in February of 2015, Joe punched Sarah repeatedly in the face, breaking her nose and causing a concussion, among other injuries. One of the assaults occurred while she was holding her then one-year-old daughter. Joe threatened to kill Sarah or to invite friends of his to rough her up. Joe was arrested the next day and charged with aggravated assault, terroristic threats, endangering the welfare of children, and simple assault. Again, in exchange for a guilty plea to the latter three charges, the aggravated assault charge was withdrawn. He was sentenced to spend 1 to 5 years in prison. That wasn't the worst of it, however. The day after Joe was arrested for the assault, a 10-year-old girl told Sarah that Joe had been molesting her for over a year and had threatened her with bodily harm as well if she ever told. Sarah was not about to give him the chance to do so. She reported the molestation to police, and Joe was hit with a boatload of felony charges dating back to 2013, including aggravated indecent assault of a child, unlawful sexual contact with a minor, indecent assault of a person under 13, corruption of minors, and child endangerment. After he was convicted on all of these charges, he was sentenced to an additional 12 and a half to 27 years for his sexual abuse charges. He is currently serving his sentence at the State Correctional Institution at Huntingdon. Joe never met his son, since Leah was still pregnant when he was sentenced to prison. Leah claimed that when she was 8 months pregnant, she was diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome. On September 21, 2015, at 5:45 in the morning, Dante Angel Mullenix was born at Gettysburg Hospital. His middle name was appropriate because Dante was a perfect, tiny angel with trusting brown eyes and a head full of dark hair that quickly turned into a mop of golden blonde curls. He was a happy baby, according to Sarah, who continued to allow Leah to live in her home along with Dante. Sarah worked as a caregiver for people who were elderly or had disabilities, and she had 5 kids of her own, but she immediately developed a special bond with her nephew. Sarah called Dante Monkey Man after his favorite purple blanket with cartoon monkey faces on it. He would rub the blanket against his face while he went to sleep. Sarah said,
"He used to love that blanket. He carried it around everywhere with him."
Sarah later described Dante as
a very sweet, loving, happy, energetic, adorable little boy, loved by everyone he came in contact with.
She also said,
"His presence would light up the room. He was a little lover. He loved being held. Even just sitting on your lap would make him happy and content."
Before long, Dante began exhibiting developmental disabilities and failing to meet his expected milestones. He was slow to learn to walk, and even as he approached his third birthday, he was nonverbal, only using a few small words, such as "yeah" and "ew." He had trouble chewing and swallowing food, and when he was upset, he banged his head. Sarah suspects Dante may have been on the autism spectrum, but he never received a formal diagnosis, although he did receive early intervention services for a while. Adams County Children and Youth Services, or CYS, provided in-home services to Dante and helped Leah obtain cash assistance, her driver's license, and a car. Sarah's youngest daughter, who was almost 2 when Dante was born, was Dante's best friend, and the two were nearly joined at the hip. Just so you can hear his sweet little voice, here's a clip of the two playing on some playground equipment in the backyard of Sarah's home together. Most of what you'll hear is Dante giggling at his cousin's antics, but he also makes a few noises that might signal frustration as he turns a big steering wheel. Leah and Sarah's father, Larry Mullenix, was also quoted in the York Daily Record article, saying,
"In reality, Leah was not fit to be a mother."
Larry only met Dante 3 times, but he noted that it appeared to him that Leah sometimes felt the baby was a nuisance, saying it reminded him of the way she used to complain during childhood about having to care for her dog. Leah, however, told the reporter she loved Dante, adding,
"I actually am a fit parent."
In the summer of 2018, a few months before Dante's third birthday, Sarah and Leah had a falling out, and Sarah gave her baby sister 30 days to find somewhere else to live. Instead of taking time to find an appropriate home for herself and her toddler son, Leah grabbed Dante and left right then and there, going to stay with some friends in York, a city about 30 minutes away from Sarah's home in Strabane Township. Some of these friends may not have been the most savory of characters, and reportedly, many of Leah's friends had gang affiliations and involvement with illegal drugs. One such friend was a man she met after leaving her sister's home. While getting her hair done, she met 33-year-old hairstylist Hector Rivera, street name Holiday. Leah told Holiday that she and Dante were essentially homeless, and he offered them a room for a week in his mom's home on East South Street in York. Holiday told the reporter,
"That little man was perfectly taken care of in my house. He had everything."
Referring to Dante as his stepson, Holiday said he shelled out about $300 on clothes and diapers for Dante. While staying with Holiday, Leah was involved in a drug investigation after York City Police apparently found marijuana in a car she was riding in, but she told a reporter it wasn't her car or her marijuana, and she was not charged. In August of 2018, Leah and Dante were kicked out of the Rivera home. A friend paid for them to stay in a motel room for a night or two, but after that, they had nowhere to stay. While sitting in a nearby McDonald's with her son on August 17th, Leah received a Facebook message from someone named Tyree Bowie, who she'd never met or spoken to, although her sister, Sarah, had traded online messages with him about a year before. It seems likely Tyree came across Leah in Facebook's People You May Know suggestions. Tyree's message read,
"Hey, do I know you?"
Leah replied, and they messaged back and forth for a while before she told Tyree she and Dante were homeless and had nowhere to go. Tyree, who was 40 at the time while Leah was 21, invited her to bring Dante to his mom's place for a bath, and Leah accepted. The two quickly began dating. Soon after Leah and Tyree met, Sarah found out that Leah and Dante were without a home. On August 22nd of that year, Sarah filed an emergency complaint for custody of her nephew in Adams County Court, alleging that her younger sister was not only mentally and financially unstable, but also physically and verbally abusive to Dante. In the complaint, Sarah wrote,
"He is not getting the care that he needs."
A court date was set for September 5, 2018. Tyree's mother, Cheryl Preston, told the reporter that when she came home from work one day in late August, she found Tyree in the living room, holding Dante. With tears in his eyes, Tyree told his mother,
"I need to find a shelter so they have a place to go. I love this little boy, but I need to make sure he's going to be safe so I can move on."
Tyree contacted a local shelter for domestic abuse survivors called Access York, which is overseen by the York YWCA. Tyree was told there was room for the mother and her young son, and at some point before the end of August, Leah and Dante moved into the shelter. On August 31st, Leah took Dante to the York Hospital emergency room, where she told medical staff her 2-year-old son had been suffering for at least 4 days, possibly longer, with swelling and painful ulcers on his genitals. Hospital staff told her that Dante suffered from a
very painful condition.
She was given 2 prescriptions for Dante, but she didn't fill them. She instead returned to the shelter, where staff witnessed little Dante crying and screaming in pain. In fact, while the poor baby screamed and cried through most of the night, shelter staff reported seeing Leah sleeping through it. It took over an hour for the staff to convince Leah even to give Dante Tylenol to ease his pain. The following day, shelter staff filed a child abuse report with the York County Office of Children, Youth, and Families. In the early morning hours of September 2nd, Leah texted Tyree,
"You're going to have to find a way to bring his medicine. I can't take this constant crying, him taking his diaper off in bed, and his dick bleeding."
Just a side note there, I've never met a mother who referred to her own baby's genitals that way, and just reading it made my skin crawl. Later that morning, Leah texted Tyree,
"They told me I told him to go fuck off and go away. I told him to go play with his toys or something, because me and Holiday were going to get into it. I told them he's still traumatized from him witnessing Holiday fuck his own kids up. He always run away crying and screaming."
Dante was also seen on September 2nd by a nurse practitioner named Natalie, who wrote in her report that she suspected trauma and neglect and believed Dante, who was covered in bruises, should be taken into CYS custody. Interestingly, the report also said that in Natalie's opinion,
child acted differently around mother than when just with nurse.
During his examination at York Hospital, a forensic medical record diagram was completed, documenting over 20 bruises on Dante's head, face, neck, trunk, arms, legs, genitals, and feet. there was also what appears to be a cigarette burn on his temple. Leah claimed she didn't know what caused her son's injuries, suggesting they were insect bites. She claimed she didn't notice a large bruise on Dante's forehead, telling the CYS caseworker that Dante banged his head on hard surfaces and that she wanted him evaluated for autism. Child welfare employees who visited the shelter forced Leah to fill Dante's prescriptions. According to police, shelter employees had to show Leah how to use the medication, even applying the prescription antifungal cream to Dante themselves to show her how it was done. Afterwards, she texted Tyree,
"The cream is going to be a problem. It's hard to touch his dick."
Despite Natalie's recommendation and Dante's documented injuries, CYS still determined Dante was safe and allowed him to stay in the shelter with his mother. Photos taken of Dante on September 2nd show a little boy clearly suffering from some type of ulcers to his face. Leah claimed they were ulcers that had spread after he put his hands into his diaper and then touched his face. In some of the pictures, Dante's Aunt Sarah believes someone applied makeup on her nephew, likely in an attempt to camouflage his injuries, which included that large bruise on Dante's upper forehead. After 2 a.m. the following morning, Leah texted Tyree,
"We'll be lucky if we don't get kicked out, because all he does every night is cry all fucking night and won't stay out of his fucking diaper. I can't deal with it anymore, like for real, for real. He had all his fucking medicine and all he does is scream and cry. He cries worse than a fucking newborn. I can't keep going on no sleep either. It's making me have mental breakdowns."
On September 4th, CYF met with Leah to discuss services they could offer her, but she refused their help. On September 5th, the day of the custody hearing with Sarah, Leah did not appear in court, instead contacting the court by phone and saying she had a flat tire. Common Pleas Judge Christina M. Simpson agreed to move the court date to October 3rd, stipulating that a warrant would be issued if either party did not attend on that date. By October 3rd, however, there would be no custody to fight for. By then, Dante would already be dead. September 6th, 2018, began like a normal day. Tyree swung by the shelter to pick up Leah and Dante to run a few errands. Reportedly, one of those errands was stopping by the hospital to have Dante's genitals looked at again. His vital signs were fine, but his ulcers were still painful and infected. Leah suggested they may have been caused by a genital infection called balanitis, and she said staff at the hospital agreed. After the hospital visit, the trio picked up fast food and later returned to the home where Tyree was staying at the time. Tyree later told police that Dante seemed to be having trouble breathing. He also told them he witnessed Dante having
a problem with his eyes rolling back in his head.
When he was in the bathroom, he told them, he heard a
muffled cry
and went downstairs to see what was wrong, at which point he saw Leah put something in her pocket that he thought may have been cover-up makeup, although Leah later denied that. Soon afterward, Leah told Tyree she had a migraine and asked him to take her to the emergency room. Tyree agreed, dropping her off at the hospital at 8:25 p.m., which left Dante in his sole care. After dropping Leah off, Tyree and Dante entered Rutter's Gas Station and Farm Store on North Susquehanna Trail in Manchester Township, where Dante was seen apparently walking just fine on surveillance video just after 8:30 p.m. A little after 9 p.m., Tyree texted Leah that Dante jumped out of the car and hurt himself.
"He fucked his chin up. He tried getting out the car and fucking fell. I told him to wait."
Leah responded,
"Shaking my fucking head. And I already have CYS up my ass. Little shit needs to learn how to listen."
At 10:23 p.m., Tyree carried Dante, unresponsive, into the emergency room at York Hospital, handed the little boy to medical staff, and left the building. 20 minutes later, Leah and Tyree had a short video chat, after which the following text exchange took place. It's a little lengthy, but I think it's important. Tyree:
"Baby, is he okay? Please tell me he's okay, baby. I'm sitting here crying. I never went through something like that. Baby, I'm scared. All I did was give him crackers, baby. I'm sorry. Baby, hello. Baby, hello. Please, baby, tell me he's okay. I gave him the crackers. That's all I did, baby."
Leah:
"I know, baby, and that's all I know. That and they're going to end up sending him to Hershey."
Tyree:
"No, baby. Why Hershey? Baby, is he okay? Please tell me he's okay. Don't fucking lie to me. I have nothing to hide. Just tell me the truth, please. Is my son okay? Like there was nothing I could do to help him, baby."
Leah:
"I know, Tyree. It would have been the same for me if I was you."
Tyree:
"I never went through this shit. It's scary, my boy."
Leah:
"I know it's scary."
Tyree:
"My son, Fuck it, he not blood, he's my son, and I gave him the cookies. I did, I gave them to him. I'm sorry.
Leah.
I know you're sorry. It's traumatizing.
Tyree.
No, seeing his face, he wouldn't smile at me, was the worst. I can't get his face out my head. I can't. He always smiled at me, but nothing. I gave him mouth to mouth and beat on his chest, but nothing. Baby, I can't do this.
Leah.
I can't do this without you.
Tyree.
We was coming to surprise you and this fucking happens.
Leah.
I really need you here, baby.
Tyree.
I'm coming, baby. Just need to clear my head.
Leah.
I know, baby. It hurts so fucking bad.
Tyree.
No, it's past that. My boy, in my care. My fucking care. This happens in my care. Like, what the fuck?
Leah.
It was an accident. You have to be here, Tyree.
Tyree.
I should have never gave them to him without a drink. I don't know. It's my fault.
Leah.
Come here now, Tyree.
Tyree.
Why? Don't lie to me.
Leah.
I need you, Tyree. They need to know what happened, so they need your side.
Tyree.
I'm coming, baby. I just need time to myself. Like, it wasn't on purpose. I know what's up. Like you said, it was an accident. I just need to clear my head, that's all.
Leah.
I know, baby. I need you here right now, though. Please, I'm falling apart.
Tyree.
Baby.
Leah.
Please.
Tyree.
Please what?
Leah.
Come here.
Tyree.
Where is my boy?
Leah.
Going to be heading to Hershey.
Tyree.
I'm here. And why Hershey? Is he okay, baby?
Leah.
Come and I'll tell you.
Tyree.
What the fuck, really?
Leah.
It's too much to text.
Tyree.
No, text. It's cool, just give a few, I'll be up.
Leah, okay. Tyree.
But I think after this we should go our separate ways.
Leah.
What the fuck?
Tyree.
You're not being real with me.
Leah.
I am, I want to let you know what's going on. He's getting flown to Hershey to the intensive care.
Tyree.
No, I mean everything. You still take him around dudes you've been.
Leah.
Really, Tyree?
Tyree.
Every time I see him, he got a new bruise. It's like then you want me to have him, like, what the fuck?
Leah.
Now I'm going to the station.
Tyree.
Why, what the fuck?
Tyree was interviewed at the York City Police Department headquarters just before 10 a.m. the following morning. In his first interview, he told the detective he gave Dante animal crackers in the car. He said the little boy began choking on his snack near Prospect Hill Cemetery and became unresponsive around George and Maple Streets in York. However, in his second interview, he told police that Dante began choking near Lexton Drive and North Susquehanna Trail in Manchester Township. Due to Dante's grave condition, he was transferred from York to Penn State Hershey Medical Center, which contains a specialized children's hospital. When Sarah heard that her beloved nephew was fighting for his life, she wanted to be by his side, but she was not allowed. CYS, she said, let Leah control who was allowed in to see Dante, and Sarah's name was left decisively off the list. Dante remained on life support for several days. On September 15, 2018, Dante Angel Mullinix was officially pronounced dead, although his little body remained on life support with the hope that his organs would be harvested for donation. However, the findings of Dante's autopsy would put a decisive end to that noble plan. I'll get back to that a little later. Before I explain why, let's talk about Tyree for a minute. Due to the small change in his story about where Dante began choking and the indisputable fact that he was the sole person caring for Dante when he became unresponsive, Tyree Marshall Bowie was arrested on September 19, 2018, and charged with criminal homicide and endangering the welfare of a child. His criminal homicide charge was ultimately upgraded to charges of first-degree and third-degree murder. Tyree was booked into York County Prison, where he currently sits as of this recording, with no bail. Tyree grew up in the city of York amidst 10 sisters and 5 brothers. He graduated in 1996 from William Penn Senior High School. His mother, Cheryl Preston, told reporter Dylan Sigelbaum that her son loved the Dukes of Hazzard as a kid, as well as cars and video games, and he played football for the Boys Club of York. In his recent adulthood, he worked at several chain restaurants, and he also did construction work through a temp agency. As of his arrest in 2018, Tyree had fathered 7 children of his own. This isn't the first time Tyree has felt the heat of authorities breathing down his neck. He has a pretty significant criminal record. Regarding his history of run-ins with the law, Cheryl said,
"He's not perfect. He's done things in his life, things that he regrets.
One of those things took place when he was 18, after a young woman reported Tyree assaulted her at a convenience store. On April 28, 1997, Tyree placed 8 threatening phone calls to the girl and her mother, who lived in West York, threatening to set their home on fire, damage the mother's vehicle, and kill everyone in the house. Tyree pleaded guilty to a charge of harassment and received a sentence of a $100 fine or 25 hours of community service. In the juvenile justice system, Tyree spent some time in a boot camp program, although the reason why is unknown. Tyree was next arrested on October 12, 2000, when police discovered he was carrying a pager, $815 in cash, and a bag containing 11 ounces of marijuana. He was not sentenced to jail for this offense, as Common Pleas Judge John S. Kennedy told him,
"I'm going to give you a chance here to get your life in order. You're now an adult, and this is your last chance, okay, to do something and not screw it up."
Within 5 years, Judge Kennedy rescinded that kindness, ruling that Tyree had violated probation and thereby sentencing him in 2005 to 1.5 to 3 years in prison. He was out by January of 2006 when his 10-month-old daughter was admitted to York Hospital's pediatric ward, suffering
extensive bruising on her head, face, neck, arms, and shoulders,
as well as bilateral retinal hemorrhaging, which means bleeding in both eyes. Some of her bruises appeared older than others, indicating they had not been caused by a single incident. In fact, Dr. David Turkowitz, the chairman of the Board of Pediatrics at York Hospital, made the determination that the baby's injuries were not accidental. Tyree and his daughter's mother, Amber Mummert, told police they had seen the injuries, but they did not know what had caused them, saying the baby must have fallen. Both Tyree and Amber were charged in the incident, ultimately pleading guilty to endangering the welfare of a child and receiving sentences of 3 years probation, with the first 6 months to be served on house arrest. Amber's attorney, Senior Assistant Public Defender Aaron Thompson, said Amber was
not the one
who injured her daughter. Tyree's attorney, Scott McCabe, said there was
never an indication
that Tyree abused the baby. Common Pleas Judge Michael J. Brillhart said that the baby's injuries,
by all suggestions,
involved Tyree. Saying that Tyree battered Amber, the judge said that although Amber believed Tyree when he said the baby had fallen,
the obvious nature and extent of the injuries belie those circumstances.
Prosecutors offered the plea deal in large part because it would have been nearly impossible to prove which parent injured the baby. Deputy Prosecutor Heather Reiner said,
"Mr. Bowie admits that he failed to notify appropriate authorities when he observed the injuries on the child."
In addition to apparently physically abusing Amber, it is documented that Tyree was abusive to 3 additional romantic partners. In 1996, he and an unnamed woman reached a settlement without admitting wrongdoing on a final protection from abuse order. In 2009, he punched a woman and broke her nose. On the phone with York City Police after that incident, Tyree said,
"I'm not doing good at all. I messed up real bad."
He pleaded guilty to a harassment charge and was ordered to pay a $300 fine. Finally, and most recently, in 2017, Tyree was fined $300 for violating a protective order another woman had taken out on him. The woman alleged several previous incidents in which Tyree physically abused her. Once, she said, he was punching her and
accidentally hit the child.
A longtime friend of Tyree's, Lacey Pfeiffer, told a reporter that Tyree had been trying to turn things around.
"He wanted to do things the right way. He was in and out of jail and stuff. He's like, I'm never going to go back."
As for his possible involvement in Dante's death, Lacey said,
"If I had even like 1 ounce of a second of doubt in my head that Tyree did this, I would never ever defend him. Never."
There was a funeral for Dante, but according to Sarah, no one in his family, besides Leah herself, was allowed to attend it. Instead, it was attended by many of Leah's friends with gang and drug involvement. Dante was buried in an unmarked grave in Mount Rose Cemetery in Spring Garden Township, Pennsylvania. The family wasn't pleased that Dante was not buried in the same cemetery as his uncle, Leah and Sarah's brother, Joshua, a military veteran who died in 2006. Sarah said,
"Leah collected money for Dante's funeral. I don't know what she did with it because the funeral was paid for, along with a casket."
A GoFundMe was created immediately after Dante's death, but Sarah and the Justice for Dante page had nothing to do with it, although the title of the campaign originally stated,
"Click here to support Dante's funeral, organized by Justice for Dante."
After Sarah posted on the Facebook page that she hadn't created any such campaign, the organizer changed the name. I'll talk a little more about the GoFundMe campaign later in this episode. Dante's grave was without a marker for several months until one of Sarah's childhood friends ended up paying for a grave marker, which was placed in March of 2019. The stone, which is flat and lies flush with the ground, features a black and gold plaque with a photo of Dante on one side and a gold angel on the other. The inscription reads,
Dante Angel Mullinix, September 21st, 2015 to September 15th, 2018. We will always love you, Monkey Man.
Not long before the stone was placed, Sarah and her five children visited Dante's unmarked grave, along with York Daily Record reporter Dylan Siegelbaum.
Dante was, he's a happy baby. His laugh would, like, light up the room. He was very goofy.
I actually remember one time when I had to watch him, he was in my room jumping up and down on my bed, and he was on my Xbox. And he kept screaming and cracking up laughing and just, like, smashing buttons on the Xbox. He thought he was playing a video game. Next thing you know, he was on Netflix watching a cartoon.
Or there's times, like, you'd be in, like, in a high chair and you'd sit there and talk to him. He'd, like, close his eyes like you can't see him. He used to always do that, too. Sometime by March, he should have a headstone. And hopefully no other child gets to slip through the system like he did. He fell through the cracks.
How would you feel if you were, like, separated from your family? And we couldn't even see him during his funeral or anything. We didn't even know what happened to him until everyone else was starting to tell us.
After Dante's headstone was placed, Sarah said,
I'm just glad he has one, that he's finally marked. He was left unmarked, like he didn't matter, just thrown in a hole.
After Dante's death, Leah contacted her ex-boyfriend, Holiday, in a conversation via Facebook Messenger, where Holiday refuted Leah's apparent claims that he abused her, and Leah tried to bullshit her way out of blame. Leah wrote,
They can't charge you with murder. You weren't there, and I wasn't either.
Holiday replied,
I know, they're trying to hit me with the child endangerment stuff because of you saying that I was abusive to you and him. You went to the shelter and told the shelter that I was abusing him. Why? You know I took care of him and I never did anything to harm him. Why would you lie like that?
Leah said,
That other cop brought up the night we were pulled over on South Street and you had weed. We both could have got hit with child endangerment for that shit.
Not to be deterred from making his point, Holiday shot back,
Leah, please stop. Stop. It's because you said I was abusive. You said that to the fucking people. You said that I was hitting on him. You said that I will beat on you in front of him. You said all this shit, bro. Stop lying and saying that it's for me having weed. It's for you saying that I was abusive towards him. Why did you lie and tell everyone that I was abusive?
I found that exchange very interesting. On top of that, during the CYS investigation on September 2nd, 2018, Leah denied using drugs and alcohol, reported domestic violence between herself and Holiday, and denied having a criminal history. The CYS report stated,
Mother said she is no longer with Hector, thus why she is at the shelter. Mother denied child was ever harmed during altercations between her and Hector. Mother said Hector would raise hand but never hit child. Child would observe Hector yelling at mom.
In the next paragraph was this intriguing statement.
Caseworker asked child about bald spots on child head, and mother stated when she was in someone else's car, he grabbed razor while in back seat and cut hair. Mother reports she was driving and does not do well multitasking. Caseworker advised mother she needed to be more proactive to make sure things like that are not in child's reach.
After Dante died, social media was alight with criticism of both Leah's parenting and CYS's handling of the case. With her son dead for only a matter of days, Leah spoke to the press to clear her name. Regarding the many previous CYS reports against her, she said,
These were false allegations. Okay, CYS, they're like the police, they do their investigation, that's what they do. So you're more or less saying that CYS is stupid when they're not.
Leah had this to say to ABC 27.
Once we moved up to York, he got out of his shell. He started dancing. Like, there'd be people going down the road, blasting music, and you see this little boy on the sidewalk dancing, throwing his fist up.
I knew nothing about, his charges, like his rap sheet. I found out that he has a really long rap sheet from burglary, trespassing, to abuse, child endangerment. I knew nothing about that.
Nobody who really knew Tyree knew his background. Like, there are people who knew him for years and years, and they did not know the horrible stuff that he has done, and that's on his record. FaceTime me again after 10, flipping out. He's not breathing, he's not breathing, he's not breathing. I'm just like, he needs to come to the hospital. He needs medical attention. Call 911, bring him to the hospital, something.
He had my son for 2 hours, and I heard the damage that was done was blunt force trauma to his head. He was strangled and suffocated.
Tyree, I hope you burn in hell. Instead of looking for justice for my son, it's just bashing me. What's the point of that? And selling shirts with a picture of my son on it without my permission.
There's only a few people who are actually there supporting me and helping me. And my family is not one of them.
The Justice for Dante Facebook group Leah referenced in that interview is run in part by her sister, Sarah. Leah's behavior in her news interviews can be described at the very kindest as peculiar. She often smiles and looks animated in places where you wouldn't expect someone to do so. This clip is a low-quality recording of an interview Leah gave to Fox 43.
Well, I sort of figured he was the one that did this, considering he was the one responsible for my son at this point in time. And I am glad that the York City police finally did charge him for what he did, my baby boy. He brings him inside, gives him to a nurse, takes off.
So you saw your baby
limp and there's a bruise on his face and a scrape on his chin, which he did not have that a couple hours earlier when I was young. Left out a lot of the story because they told me about bite marks, cigarette burns. My son ended up with an STD, and then the doctors told me that the reason for the brain damage was because of blunt force trauma.
And that all happened that night?
Yes.
He didn't have those cigarette burns before, did he?
No.
Why would you let Tyree take your son if you know that he's the kind of guy he is?
I actually didn't know. If I knew the type of person he was, I would have never let him an inch, like even 1,000 feet or anything like that near my child.
You might have noticed Leah referenced a few things in that interview that I haven't talked about yet, but don't worry, we'll come back to that. The next clip is also from Fox 43.
Everybody that met him fell in love with him because he was just a really great kid. And then he FaceTimed me again after 10, flipping out, saying, he's not breathing. And then I'm just like, call the ambulance, like, bring him to the hospital or something because my son needs medical attention. I told him that multiple times, and then he finally brought him in. My son was completely limp. He gave him to a nurse, and then he took off. And then we have a lot of people on Facebook bashing me, saying, oh, Leah's a piece of she did this to her son. No, I did not. Everybody's blaming me, accusing me, but I was the one that abused my baby. I love my baby more than anything. And I don't even have him anymore. I'm still in denial that this happened to my baby. And it seems like he also was sexually assaulted, too.
Much later, Sarah would send the interview clips to two body language specialists, both of whom were of the opinion that Leah was not being truthful in her interviews. They referred to her smiling in the interviews as something called duper's delight, which is a micro-expression conveying an emotional thrill that some people get when they cheat or deceive someone else. Besides his supposedly changing stories and the fact that he was the last adult to care for Dante, there was another factor in the decision to charge Tyree as well. According to police, they were unable to find any evidence that Dante choked on animal crackers. In fact, they said they didn't find any cookies or crackers at all. However, police records of the case include a supplemental narrative dated June 4, 2019, in which it is stated that some kind of tan residue was found in various areas inside Tyree's car, including the top of the driver's side door and the steering wheel. This tan residue was tested and determined to be microscopically consistent with animal crackers, Teddy Grahams, or a similar starchy product. On the Justice for Dante page, Sarah has posted multiple times about an empty package of Teddy Grahams that were reportedly found in the trash by one of Tyree's friends. She even shared a photo of the package that was originally posted in the Justice for Tyree group on October 2, 2018. Sarah was also told there was a package of animal crackers in Dante's diaper bag, which she believes was in Tyree's car. Sarah points to what she considers the detective's failure or unwillingness to collect these items, which she believes are evidence in the case, as one of the main reasons she doesn't trust the police investigation into her nephew's death. At Tyree's preliminary hearing in December of 2018, Chief Deputy Prosecutor Chuck Murphy called two witnesses. The first was York City Police Detective Kyle Hauer, the lead detective on Dante's case, who conducted both of Tyree's police interviews. Detective Hauer said Tyree
verified and stated he was the only one in care of the victim.
The detective testified that Tyree initially reported that Dante had choked on cookies and stopped breathing. During his interview, Tyree then said Dante fell in the Rutter's parking lot. Later, he said Dante fell out of his car seat. However, the detective testified, the surveillance video from the store didn't show a fall. In the video, Dante seemed fine and walked on his own. The second witness was Dauphin County forensic pathologist Dr. Wayne Ross, who conducted Dante's autopsy, ruling that the boy's death was caused by traumatic brain injury with strangulation and chest compression. Dante had a significant amount of bruising on his face, scalp, neck, and body, and he had suffered a subdural hematoma as well as hemorrhaging deep inside his neck, which had been compressed back. Most of the bruises Dante had suffered were fresh, Dr. Ross testified, adding that Dante's injuries would not have been caused by CPR. The prosecutor confirmed that Dr. Ross had watched the security video from the gas station on the evening of September 6, 2018, before asking,
"And after watching that video, do you have an opinion as to the timing of those injuries and the strangulation?"
Dr. Ross replied,
"Yes, those injuries occurred after the video was completed."
After the hearing, Tyree's defense attorney, Farley Holt, told reporters,
"My client is absolutely innocent in this case."
Promising he would prove that Tyree Bowie did not kill Dante Mullinix, Mr. Holt added,
"I'm going to prove who did."
While the York County District Attorney's Office declined to respond directly to Mr. Holt's statement, spokesman Kyle King said,
"We look forward to presenting the evidence at trial. If we don't feel we could prove something beyond a reasonable doubt, we would not proceed forward in doing so."
Dante's aunt Sarah Mullinix told reporters she did not believe Tyree was responsible for Dante's death, saying that Dante was being abused and neglected prior to his mother's introduction to Tyree.
"I just want the person who killed my nephew and abused my nephew charged."
At one point, Tyree's attorney told a reporter,
"This poor kid was doomed from the beginning. He was born into a situation he had no control over."
Leah's response to hearing that sentiment was to retort,
"No, my son was doomed when Tyree came around, and he was left alone with him."
Notice she didn't say, "I left him alone with Tyree." No, she said he was left alone with him, as if she had no say in the matter and nothing to do with it at all. Deflecting blame appears to be one of Leah's favorite pastimes. In January of 2019, 22-year-old Leah Lynette Mullinix was charged with felony endangering the welfare of children for failing to provide proper medical treatment to Dante for the painful ulcers on his genitals. She later told a reporter,
"I didn't do anything to harm my son. I love my son."
As for the prescription she was given for Dante on August 31st, she said she did fill the prescriptions. Tyree was supposed to pick them up, but his car broke down, she said.
"I did my best to take care of my son because he meant everything to me. It doesn't matter what all those people on social media are saying."
At a court hearing for Leah, Detective Hauer once again testified, stating before the court that Leah was currently pregnant. In fact, she got pregnant in September, the same month Dante died, and she wasn't sure who the father was. Leah told District Judge Ronald Haskell Jr. that she was unemployed and in the process of applying for supplemental security income because of an undisclosed mental disability. "I find it highly interesting that there was apparently enough evidence to charge Leah with child endangerment for neglecting her son's medical needs, but at the time, CYS saw no issue leaving Dante in Leah's care. In fact, they checked the box on their paperwork stating that Dante was safe." After she was charged, Leah spent just over 3 weeks in York County Prison before being released on supervised bail on the condition that she attend prenatal appointments and receive appropriate medical care during her pregnancy. In May of the same year, the Pennsylvania Department of Human Services released information about Dante's case as part of a summary of child fatalities and near fatalities from the fourth quarter of 2018. Quoting directly from the summary, which was, for a while, available to the public,
"The victim child had sustained a subdural hematoma, broken ribs, a battered penile area and scrotum, bite marks on the arms, and a lacerated liver and pancreas."
Between May of 2017 and August of 2018, Adams County CYS received a number of reports regarding Dante. The complaints included inadequate food and clothing, Leah's mental health, inappropriate discipline, homelessness, and inappropriate caregivers. None of those calls were categorized as suspected child abuse. The summary stated that CYS provided services to the family from May through October of 2017. In March of 2018, a report received by CYS was deemed invalid, and reports from June and August of 2018 were screened out. In September of 2018, the York County Office of Children, Youth, and Families received a report of suspected child abuse for failure to provide medical treatment. That report was determined to be unfounded. Dante died just days later. Sarah told a reporter,
I tried to save him, and it didn't work out. There's a problem with children's services. There are programs set up to help children and give them a voice, but they didn't do that with Dante. What do you do when multiple people are reporting a child is hurt and no one does anything?
Kathleen Palm, founder of the Pennsylvania nonprofit organization, the Center for Children's Justice, said that the public's trust in child protection systems weakens when something like this happens. Hospitals, a domestic violence shelter, and CYS employees all saw Leah and Dante in the week prior to his final hospital admission, so he was certainly not, Ms. Palm said,
off the radar. It's so darn frustrating and unacceptable. Pennsylvania still lacks a sense of urgency about these children. We treat the critical incidences affecting young children as anomalies, and yet are they? Or are they happening in every county across the Commonwealth, and we are just not sufficiently connecting the dots? We can't, nor should we, overlook that Dante was known to a number of systems: healthcare, child welfare, domestic violence. It is essential that there be some independent review of all the systems he interacted with and what those interactions entailed toward not just answering critical questions about his life and death, but ultimately toward protecting the collective community of children living in Pennsylvania.
What hasn't been mentioned in any of the news articles is something else found during Dante's autopsy and the reason his organs weren't suitable for donation. It's something Leah referenced in her early television interviews. Dante's organs could not be donated because at the time of his death, this not even 3-year-old baby had an active case of type 2 herpes, or HSV-2, a sexually transmitted infection. That was the reason for the swelling, ulceration, and excruciating pain Dante suffered that landed him in the emergency room on August 31, 2018. In text messages on that day, Leah wrote to Tyree,
We're about to give him another bath. He is super fussy. Babe, he needs to go to the hospital. Can you come back?
Tyree replied,
Aw, what's wrong with my buddy?
Leah's reply sounds nothing like a concerned mother discussing her 2-year-old son, and I apologize in advance for what I'm about to read. She said,
Puss on his dick.
Tyree's response was,
Okay, but I fucking said that shit been going on. When we first met, it wasn't as bad, but it was off, I told you that. That's what you said, he used to throw him down on the toilet when he pissed and shit himself, and made him sit there for hours.
There's no name mentioned in the messages, but the last man Leah dated and lived with prior to Tyree was Hector Holiday Rivera. Leah tried to play Tyree's comments off, writing,
Yeah, and his dick was fine till recently. I don't know why the fuck this shit is happening.
Tyree wrote,
It was fucked up when we met. You changed him in front of me.
Still claiming ignorance, Leah replied,
But it wasn't before. That's what I don't understand. Shit started popping out after we left that shithole like it was a delayed reaction.
When Tyree asked,
What shithole?
Leah replied,
South Street.
She was referring to the home of ex-boyfriend Holiday. When they did get to the hospital on August 31st, Leah told medical staff Dante had been suffering from the ulcers for at least 4 days, possibly longer. If they were present when she met Tyree on August 17th, how long before that was Dante suffering from this herpes outbreak? I said earlier that I'd come back to the GoFundMe campaign that was created, in Sarah's words,
not long after the plug was pulled.
Whoever wrote the campaign not only gave inaccurate information, but also seemed to know something no one should have known. In the entire campaign description, there was no punctuation whatsoever. The first part of the description read,
On 9/6/2018, Dante Mullenix was rushed to York Hospital unresponsive by his babysitter. He was later transferred to Penn State's Children's Hospital in Hershey, where he was put into a coma. It was later discovered that Dante was sodomized and beaten. He passed on 9/15/2018. The doctors pronounced him dead at 11:15 a.m., a week before his third birthday.
First things first, if Leah was dating Tyree at the time, why was he referred to as Dante's babysitter? Secondly, the description stated that Dante was put into a coma when he reached Hershey, which is false. Dante never regained consciousness. Finally, and I'm sure you caught this when I said it, but nowhere in any documentation I can find is it stated or even implied that Dante was sodomized. Where did that information come from? Oh, and one more thing. It's unknown where any proceeds of that GoFundMe campaign ended up. According to Sarah, Dante's burial plot was donated by a local organization, and the funeral home donated its services. I also mentioned earlier that Leah was pregnant again by September or October of 2018. As soon as she gave birth to her second child, a daughter, CYS swooped right in and took the baby from her. that child is in the process of being adopted. Before long, Leah was pregnant yet again and gave birth to another daughter, who was also removed from her custody immediately. That daughter remains in foster care, and it is highly unlikely Leah will regain custody of her. Common sense would dictate CYS made the correct decision in removing Leah's two younger children, although considering she wasn't indicated for child abuse through one of their own investigations, I can only assume their legal reasoning for removing her parental rights is because of her criminal charges. If so, then, wouldn't taking her kids away and even adopting one of them out be considered a violation of her constitutional rights since she has not yet been convicted? A paternity test was done to determine the father of Leah's second child, whose birth certificate was signed by a man who goes by the street name of Ghost. The DNA test confirmed Ghost was not the baby's father. Tyree's DNA was also tested, but he has never been provided with the results of that test. The fathers of both of Leah's daughters are still unknown. To mark the anniversary of Dante's death, Sarah and other family members, friends, and supporters held a celebration of Dante's life event on Sunday, September 15, 2019, at Veterans Memorial Park in York, where attendees took part in various activities, including a bounce house and face painting. Amanda Blevins, who co-runs the Justice for Dante Facebook page, told reporter Dylan Siegelbaum,
"What better way to memorialize a two-year-old that was murdered than to play? That's what we wanted to do, and we made it happen."
Tyree Bowie's mom, Cheryl Preston, also attended the celebration of life. Shortly after Sarah created the Justice for Dante page, Cheryl created a Facebook page called Justice for Tyree, where she keeps followers up to date on the status of her son's case. I'll include the links to both pages in today's show notes. Tyree's trial is tentatively expected to take place in January of 2022. Right now, his defense attorney, Farley Holt, is waiting for their expert forensic pathologist, Dr. David Fowler, who is the former chief medical examiner for the state of Maryland, to return to the U.S. from England, where he is a professor at the University of Oxford. The COVID-19 pandemic had, as of Tyree's last court date on August 1st, thus far prevented the pathologist from traveling overseas. On the Justice for Dante page, Sarah has posted countless screenshots and details about the case, some of which were not previously available to the public, including photos she took of CYS reports and medical documents sent to her in 2020 by Tyree after he received them through discovery in his case. Sarah wholeheartedly believes Tyree is innocent and wants to see Dante's real killer prosecuted. York County authorities have apparently taken exception to Sarah's criticism of the criminal investigation and the decisions made by CYS. In March of 2021, with the consent of the York County District Attorney's Office, York County Police charged Sarah with unauthorized release of information, a misdemeanor with a maximum sentence of 1 to 2 years in prison. In August of 2020, former detective, now Sergeant Kyle Hauer, the lead investigator on Dante's case, obtained a search warrant for the Justice for Dante Facebook page after submitting an application stating that supervisors at the York County Office of Children, Youth, and Families contacted him to complain that official reports and medical records were being posted on the page. A previous search warrant was obtained in April of 2019 by Detective Tiffany Pitts, who determined the page was created by Sarah Mullenix. Since the page is public, anyone can see the confidential information posted there, so Sergeant Hauer requested the search warrant as part of his investigation into the
illegal release of these records on a public forum.
Free speech experts have had a field day over this. Ken Paulson, the director of the Free Speech Center at Middle Tennessee State University and former editor-in-chief of USA Today, told the York Daily Record that the law used to charge Sarah was
clearly intended to apply to government employees
with access to the CYS database and records, not the media or citizens attempting to inform the community about a matter of public interest. He called the application of this law to Sarah
constitutionally suspect. The First Amendment gives us a right to communicate freely, particularly about matters that affect the health and safety of our citizens. You can't outlaw that and charge someone with a misdemeanor.
Senior staff attorney with the ACLU of Pennsylvania, Sarah Rose, said of the charge against Sarah Mullenix,
"This seems like a misapplication of the statute. Forget the First Amendment aspect of it. The statute itself should not apply to her, and if it did, I would think it would violate the First Amendment."
The law itself, which I'll also link in the show notes, is Title 23, Section 6349A, and reads as follows.
Unauthorized release of information. A person who willfully releases or permits the release of any information contained in the statewide database of the county agency records required by this chapter to persons or agencies not permitted by this chapter to receive that information commits a misdemeanor of the second degree. Law enforcement officials shall ensure the confidentiality and security of information under this chapter.
Sarah's attorney, Brandy Hoke, asserts that the law is intended to prevent government employees with access to state and agency databases from releasing confidential information unlawfully. If what prosecutors say is true, that the law should apply to anyone who shares CYS documents, then anyone who posts their own stories online and references CYS documents, or anyone who even shared one of Sarah's posts, could be charged by that logic. On top of that, the quarterly report containing the details of Dante's case was publicly posted on the Pennsylvania Department of Human Services website for some time, but it has recently been taken down amid this legal controversy. The documentation she released, Sarah said, was not marked confidential, and she believes it is public record as she did not obtain it illegally. Tyree legally obtained the documents as discovery in his case, and he shared those documents with her, which she believes he should legally be free to do. Sarah is only the second person in an entire decade to be prosecuted under this Pennsylvania law. The other was a CYS caseworker who, in 2016, mistakenly revealed the name of someone who reported allegations of child abuse. That caseworker was charged and later accepted into the Accelerated Rehabilitative Disposition Program, which allows first-time nonviolent offenders to avoid conviction and have their criminal record expunged. David Snyder, executive director of the First Amendment Coalition in California, said,
"It is not at all clear to me that the state has alleged that she participated in the act that is illegal here, the release of the information from the state. Based on what I've seen, I think there's a pretty strong argument that the First Amendment would protect the publication of this information on Facebook. If the authorities had only brought one other charge based on this statute, and this one other charge was against somebody who had access to the data, I think this throws into sharp relief the fact that the statute is aimed at prosecuting people who have direct access to the information in question."
Sarah herself said,
"I'm exposing the truth. The way I look at it, they're trying to cover stuff up."
Fortunately, Sarah is not being held in jail. She is currently free on her own recognizance, and her next court date is scheduled for October, at which time the Common Pleas judge will have decided whether or not Sarah and her attorney are able to use a First Amendment defense. In the meantime, I had the pleasure of speaking with Sarah about her precious nephew, Dante, and the ongoing criminal case. You'll hear that conversation in next week's episode. My sources for this episode were an excellent article written for the York Daily Record by Dylan Siegelbaum, as well as Fox 43, the Pennsylvania Unified Judicial System online portal, Tea with Tia, Local 21 News, the Penn Live Patriot News, the Pennsylvania General Assembly website, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, the York Dispatch, No Thanks Investigates on YouTube, and Sarah Mullenix. That's it for this week. Join me next week for part two of Dante's story. If you like the show, please follow or subscribe to Suffer the Little Children on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast listening app. And please leave me a 5-star rating and a positive review on your favorite podcast platform. You can also subscribe on YouTube by searching Suffer the Little Children Podcast. Visit the website at sufferthelittlechildrenpod.com, where you can listen to episodes or become a patron for rewards ranging from a shout-out by name on the show to exclusive gifts. Follow the podcast on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and Pinterest at Suffer the Little Children Pod, and on Twitter and TikTok at STLCPod. View photos related to today's episode on Facebook and Instagram. For more stories like the one you heard today, visit sufferthelittlechildrenblog.com. This podcast is researched, written, hosted, edited, and produced by Lane. Intro theme music is by Dream Note Music, and all music for the show is licensed from audiojungle.net. Email tips, comments, questions, or case suggestions to sufferthelittlechildrenpod@gmail.com. For more information about preventing or reporting child abuse, visit childhelp.org or call your area's child abuse hotline. If you see something, say something. Until next week, bye everyone.